Okay, great. It is 3 p.m. Time to get started for our next talk. This is Zoquin Yang.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. My name is Zoquin Yang, and I'm here to present Piracy and Open Source, Reimagining Creativity. First of all, I'm really grateful to be here. So today I'm not going to showcase any products that I'm working on. Instead, I'm going to present you a very personal journey, how my experience with piracy has led me to open source. So if we are talking about my personal journey, let me start from the beginning about who I am and where did I come from. So I was born in May 1998 in a small city in China. So technically, I'm a Gen Z, probably one of the oldest Gen Z, but that still counts. So Gen Z is considered to be the first generation that's grew up with the internet. So we witnessed a lot of changes that was brought by the internet, and one is among the music industry. So back when I was young, CD was still quite popular, but still people start to listen to music online. And when I was about 6 years old, my parents bought me my first MP3 player. And back then, I had no idea what intellectual property was. So I was just going through online trying to download everything I can find. So please raise your hand if you have done something similar like me. Okay. Yeah, so we all know what I'm talking about. So back then, as many of you remember, downloading music for free is very easy because there are so many P2P websites online. Whether it's like Napster that is more used in the Western world or the ones that I used growing up in China. And it's just really easy to download them online. You can just type in the name on the website and then a free download option will just pop up. And of course, those download options are unlicensed, but what did I know? I was only 6 years old back then. And this was my first encounter with piracy. But my experience did not stop there. So, yeah. Fast forward to around 2016, when I was just started university as an industrial design student, I quickly realized that the cost of ownership doesn't just about the entertainment industry. It's also about essential tools for creation. For example, like the list of software on the screen, and those design softwares are very expensive, especially for a student with no income. So I had to turn to bootleg software. And at the time, intellectual property felt very distant, even though I already know that it's not ethical to use any bootleg software. But as a student with no income, those software can cost like easily over $100. But back then, my monthly allowance was like $300 to $400 a month. So there's really no way for me to afford the real thing. So I had to turn to bootleg software. And back then, it's also quite common in China to use any bootleg software. But as I see those kind of issue getting traction in China, I also start to see a shift in people's attitude toward them. So also around 2016, a very popular artist in China named Da Zhangwei was accused of plagiarizing other artists' work, for example, like that over here. And after this, he has publicly admitted his mistake and apologized and also paid licensing fee to the artist that he has plagiarized. And since then, I started to see a shift in people's attitude. For example, like people used to feel very indifferent in terms to plagiarizing or intellectual property infringement. But after that, people start to highly condemn such behavior. And a lot of people even will go to boycott a certain company that was involved in such behavior. And also, the Chinese government are starting to crack down any bootleg productions. And I know as a designer, it should be my instinct to also hate piracy because pirate and also copycat are probably what designers are most afraid of because they can take your work for free and then take all of your market share and eventually drive you out of business. But also because of my personal experience with piracy, I would like to keep an open mind and I'm really curious about this. What is this sudden shift in people's opinion to where piracy comes from? And also, where does piracy come from? Why people choose to pirate instead of like innovate? So this curiosity continues when I moved to the US to pursue my master's degree. And I discovered that piracy was not something that is unique to China. My classmate in the US also experienced something similar. They told me a story about that they would share a community USB drive among the classroom to download bootleg software. And this made me realize that piracy is not something that is just a cultural phenomenon, it's a global one. And so I'm not trying to justify piracy, but I began to feel maybe as long as access to essential resources restricted, piracy probably will always exist. So I decided to work on a thesis project around piracy. And every time I tell people that, one question that they always ask me is, have you been to Canal Street? And after a few time that I was asked that question, I feel like I have to visit Canal Street in New York. So Canal Street is located in the center of New York's Chinatown and is famous for its counterfeit luxury bags. And most merchants there used to display their bags publicly, but now they have evolved into something quite innovative, is that they, right now, a lot of them has a physical menu that has all of the bags printed on them, and people can just point to the bag and order there, which is quite clever, I have to say, because this way you don't have to carry any merchandise around you, and also it's safer from the police, so that you can just fold them and then just walk away. But after seeing this image, I realized that to most people, this is what piracy looks like. It's a shady business that operates in the shadow. However, piracy is much more to me than that. And in order to find out the questions that I was asking myself earlier, where does this sudden shift in people's attitude toward piracy come from? And where does piracy come from? Why people choose to pirate instead of innovate? I decided to dig a little bit into the history of piracy to help me find out. So piracy means the unauthorized use or reproduction of someone's production or creation. And today, the US government has been known for its quite strict intellectual property law. But that wasn't always the case. Let's take an example of Samuel Slater. Samuel Slater is the father of American Industrial Revolution, and he brought the spinning wheel from the UK to America. And Samuel grew up in England and worked in a water power mill, and it's there where he learned how the spinning machine worked. And when Samuel turned 21, he decided to bring this spinning machine from the UK to US. But of course, it's illegal for him to travel with such knowledge. So in order to do that, he has to disguise himself as a farmer in order to go to the US. And then in the US, he was able to build his own spinning machine, and that spinning machine ended up spreading the Industrial Revolution into the US. And this reveals a very hidden irony to us, is that US now as a gatekeeper of intellectual property also has a deep history of piracy. And fast forward to 20th century, however, piracy has been more closely associated with Asian countries, for example, like China. As you can see from this graph here, is from the European Union Intellectual Property Office, is the highest number of seizure of counterfeit and pirated goods comes from Asian countries, with China at the top of the list. This tells us, and with this graph also, and the US history of piracy are long forgotten. And this tells one thing, is that we cannot only view piracy without its context. Those who once considered pirates may not be anymore, and those who condemn the act of piracy may be pirates themselves. And I would like to take China's Shanzhai culture as a prime example. Shanzhai is a Chinese term that can loosely translate to mountain threshold or mountain village, but lately it has been it's turned into a culture around counterfeit, imitation, and parody products. And it all starts within the Shanzhai cell phone industry. The Shanzhai cell phone industry began in the mid-2000s and gaining traction by around 2006 to 2007. And at first, those phones are just cheap knockoff of global brands like Nokia. And they were loaded with flashy but poorly executed features, for example, like those LED flashy cell phone over here. Or this cell phone that looks very like a Porsche, but but Shanghai cell phone exists for a reason, because they find the market gap. In the early 2000s, the average monthly salary in Beijing was about like $100, but when iPhone 3 was first launched in China in 2009, it cost more than $700. Shanghai phone offers a affordable alternative tailored to the local needs. And Shanghai companies began by producing knockoff, but gradually evolved to creating innovative design that catered to local market needs that was previously ignored by those global tech giants. And those phones filled a market gap, such as offer dual SIM card capability or extra loud speakers for people with hearing difficulties. And some of those features were later adapted by large tech giants. For example, like Apple now also offers those dual SIM card options, which is a feature that was once pioneered by those Shanghai cell phone manufacturers. And companies like Xiaomi emerged from the same electronic industry that Shanghai cell phone culture helped develop and grow into tech giants by offering high-quality products at a competitive price and by offering affordable and high-quality products to directly quote Xiaomi's founder Lei Jun. Xiaomi eliminated the existence of Shanghai cell phone since now customer has more affordable and also high quality options. There is simply no reason to buy any Shanghai cell phone anymore. And for example, now Xiaomi has held the third largest global smartphone shipment market share right after Apple and Samsung. And the story of Shanghai is merely a reflection of China's broader innovation. Initially, Shanghai manufacturers were known for producing imitation products, but as China's economy grew, it has evolved into more innovative options in order to capture a much competitive global market. And this transformation also highlights China's transition for this reputation to imitation to something more innovative. For example, as we can see in this report in 2024, that China now holds the 11th among over 100 companies featured in the Global Innovation Index, which is impressive and quite a transition. But this also leads us to the next question is, now that China's creative industry is blooming and China's government is also trying to get rid of this reputation by establishing stricter intellectual property laws and by protecting its innovative industry, will China turn from a parrot into another gatekeeper of intellectual property? Maybe that is a question that only time will answer. But this also brings me to the last point, the relationship between piracy and open source. Although the modern IP law is created in the name of supporting innovation, it also allows companies to view intellectual property as a intangible wealth that they need to protect. However, intellectual property can also be a critical means for reproduction or an important technological base for further development, which to me means that as long as there is inequality in economic growth, there will always be things like piracy. And let's imagine what it would be like if Samuel Slater did not bring the spinning machine to the US. What would the world look like now? And like piracy and Shanghai culture, open source challenged the status quo, but it does so legally, ethically, and collaboratively. It offers us a way forward to address the gap left by the restrictive intellectual property laws, to share knowledge freely, and to create tools that empower communities to innovate on their own terms. And here's the thing. Open source is a luxury, especially for designers like me. We may not all have the capability to work on open source project or open source software design, but to me, open source is more than software or tools. Open source should be a philosophy, a way of thinking that could reshape industries far beyond tech. it should not be restricted to only about opening up softwares or opening up codes. This way, open source movement will be restricted only in the developer community. To us, we can also apply this open source mindset to like design process. For example, even though I cannot open source my design right now, but I make sure that my customers' voice are heard before any design decisions made, before any products launched, so that I can make sure that my design meets the real needs. And by this way, I was also able to share the ownership of my work with my customers, allowing more people to contribute to my work and truly open source the ownership of a product this way. And thank you. That's it.
So luckily we have a lot of time for questions.
Oh, good.
Does anyone have any questions?
Any
at all? Oh, it looks like there's one.
Just a remark, because I know Shenzhen by the city.
Mm-hmm.
So I made a relationship. Because it's the frontier of Kong and the parts of China. And
uh-huh.
It's a simple coincidence or something else that I made as a near name.
Oh, yeah, well, you mean Shenzhen, the city, right? Yeah, so I think Shenzhen culture is also originated from Shenzhen, the city, because it's like the center of China's technology industry, and Shenzhen culture also originated from that same city. But I think, yeah, it's a coincidence that this sounds very similar. Yeah.
Hello, thank you for the really amazing presentation. I have a question, but mostly I would like to ask your opinion, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you said that yourself, you have programs as designers,
mm-hmm.
like Photoshop or Illustrator or so on, that we pirate some of the time because no other alternative in the market.
Yeah.
And even though there is this big gap, there could be open source programs, but there are some, like Blender or Inkscape,
mm-hmm.
a lot of other programs that just don't exist. Why is that, according to your opinion, even though there is a need?
Oh, so you were asking about why there is a gap in not enough like free and open source software within the design community?
Yes.
Well, that is a really good question, but I also start to see the change is one thing is Figma can be considered somewhat free in some level and definitely can replace a lot of the other softwares like what Adobe used to have XD, but they don't have it anymore. Part of the reason is because Figma is a free software in some level. And I start to see the change and I am hoping for more in the future. Mm-hmm.
They have some kind of free license for students,
mm-hmm.
and I was thinking about the fact that it might also be something bad because once you start working, the company will actually have to pay for the software. So I would like to know your opinion about this. Like,
this is also has a deeper level. It's not just about free options. I've heard people talking about like. Adobe or some of those big software monopolies, they kind of somehow allow the piracy software to exist in some countries. For example, in China, it was quite popular to use pirated software, and Adobe was not very strict on like lawsuits. And this is a trick that they were using to get customers more used to using their software, so later they can find ways to sue them or in some way to transfer them into a paid customer. And I don't think there is really an answer to that question, but that's something that exists.
Yeah. Just an addendum to like previous things, Adobe.
Mm-hmm.
Adobe is actually partly using piracy to upsell their services as well,
mm-hmm.
because in some cases, I think for Photoshop, which is the most commonly pirated software, they detect when you pirate it, like some piracy versions or things can be detected by Adobe, and Adobe is giving you even more of a like reduce pricing if they detect that you pirate. They give you a large banner in the application and say, hey, please stop pirating, you get like 60% off or something for this. So they use piracy as an upselling strategy to bring it to people.
Yeah, exactly. Piracy, sometimes they are seen as a free trial. And that is why I believe free and open source software is really important, and we need more of those software in the design industry.
Yeah. I have a question. As a student, do you have an option not to pirate? No, it's a question like, were you forced, like, for example, to bring the files, the design, especially in these formats, or it was just like by default, or how it was? Just out of curiosity.
By format, do you?
For example, only in Photoshop format, or only in did you have an option not to use, for example, pirate software, but buying as a sign?
I see. Okay. Yeah. For sure. So the question is, as a student, do I have the options to use use something other than like bootleg software? And I think that really depends on different industries. For where I come from, especially in the design industry, a few years ago, there is really not so much like open source software, for example.
They already have pirated software.
That is a really good point, but I guess if there is option of free and open source software that is available that can totally replace those bootleg software, I will still choose those are free and open source because I know it's more ethical that way. And but the sad reality is there's not so much in the design industry, so that I had to rely on bootleg software, especially when I was a student. But I do hope that there will be more options in the future. Yeah. Okay. How do I encourage free and open source software if that there are already pirated software exist? Well, I know that some people are having problems with how Figma operates right now, but I still want to use Figma as a good example. Is that Figma was initially very encouraging collaborations. They were opening up their platform, allowing people to develop plugins within. And that is a way to challenge how those traditional monopoly was doing, that there was no collaborative tools out there before Figma. And that could be a one way to how to break into that.
Big round of applause.
Thank you.